Yo, 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 Thought Warriors, what is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay.
Rach, how you feeling?
Well, you know, I've been suffering a bit these last couple of days. I got the second, and I hate telling this because I don't want people to feel discouraged about getting the vaccine. I had my second shot Saturday. I had some symptoms, but I'm recovering.
What were the symptoms?
Fever, low-grade fever, body aches, chills, couldn't sleep because of the pain in my arm. But it lasted a little bit over a day. I took today off, but I'm recovering. Right. You know what I mean? I just have a day of rest. Right. But everybody should still go get vaccinated.
Go get vaccinated. But
because people will take that and they'll be like, see, that's why. But who knows how COVID would have affected me.
You've been controversial on the podcast about vaccinations.
No, I haven't. For those who are listening first time to Higher Learning, I have never been on any side but this side when it comes to the vaccine.
A Higher Learning audience, I know that you guys are hearing that, and I want you to go back into the cortexes of your memory.
Please.
And honestly ask yourself if Rachel hasn't been a little bit wishy-washy on the vaccine. You definitely
did. Did I say I was nervous? I'm sure I did, but I've never said don't get it.
You've never said don't get it.
I never said I wasn't getting it.
It seemed a little. Look.
See, I think you're starting to believe the things that you try to project on me.
That's not true.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're believing it.
I've gotten actually DMs from people that have been very upset about you and your promotion of vaccine hesitancy on the podcast that we share.
No, I think what we always promote on this podcast is honesty. And so if I feel a sense that I'm a little hesitant, I'm going to be honest with you and talk about it. But right. I've always promoted getting the vaccine. Anyways, who cares? I got my second shot. I was a little down. Now I'm up. I made it for this podcast. I'm good. And I feel good. I'm glad I got vaccinated. Let it be known, this is what you do not do before. I had a hangover when I got the vaccine.
Yeah.
I took a leave. These are things that you're not supposed to do before. Okay? Right. So that's part of the reason I'm probably suffering.
Because we all had dinner on Saturday night. Me, you, Kalika, Brian, Jackson, and his lady. We all had dinner at Granville on Saturday night, and you had a gigantic pork chop. You ate a big pork chop
from Granville. The whole thing.
The whole, just a big slab of pork. You just ate it.
Love it.
It's just so crazy to me.
Like a Why? Why do you give me shit every single time I talk about a pork chop?
I don't know, man. It's just like it's a chop. It's a chop of pork. That's kind of crazy, you know? No, that's not.
Do you eat any pork?
I like a sliver. See, bacon is like a sliver of pork. It's like a little sliver.
And that's how many slivers are you eating?
Well, I don't eat that much bacon. I haven't eaten bacon in a long time.
Okay, see, I eat turkey bacon.
It's probably been, I'd say, probably like 6 months since I've had any bacon.
Okay, well, I eat turkey bacon.
You eat turkey bacon.
How do I get my fix? A pork chop, which I don't get to have that often.
But it's a big-ass chop.
And I'd order two of them. You know, some places get that double decker, that two bone. That's me.
Y'all should have seen her. She cut the pork chops up in the little pieces.
I didn't talk for 15 minutes.
Just eating up. She was just her and her chop. Her and her chop.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Yeah, I want to say something to all the listeners of Higher Learning. Because I've been going to the Reddit room a lot. Everybody go to
oh,
the
have
Higher
you?
Learning Reddit.
To the Higher Learning Reddit?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'll go there now. I'm going to go to the Higher Learning Reddit right now. Because we have a vibrant little community there. It's not a ton of people, but it's getting bigger. So I went to the Reddit and, you know, people sometimes take opinions that we might have to heart, you know. They
hold on. Let's
go to the Higher Learning Reddit right now in the beginning of the podcast. So I have it. Are you a member? Did you join the Higher Learning Reddit?
I'm not a member of anything.
You're not a member of the Higher. Why? Why didn't you join it?
Why didn't you join it, man? I don't get on Reddit. I created an account just to do the AMA that we did.
And then you stopped. You don't go back to Reddit anymore. Reddit is a very useful place. So Thought Warriors. There's four.
What is it? What is it called? Higher Learning?
Higher Learn. It's called r/Thought Warriors.
Oh, okay? Thought Warriors. Okay.
r/Thought Warriors. These people are so amazing. They've posted about so many things. Look, they posted about your upcoming book, gave you some love about your book. They're
nice.
Having all of these different talks and things, you know, things of that nature. But there were some people there who were upset.
People are always upset about what?
Van's comments about Melinda Gates were nearing problematic/sexist. Why is he reducing her role to something so low? And then there was another one that talked about the fact that it was hard to listen to us talk about the Drake thing because of the amount of percentage that I gave to Drake, right? They say me giving Drake 10% is too little. Okay.
So it was.
That's how I look at it. Had the situation been reversed, I'll give you an example. I bet people don't know this, but Russell Crowe was rumored to have ruined Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan's relationship.
I knew that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's rumored that Russell Crowe had an affair with Meg Ryan, and that made her break up with Dennis Quaid.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, Russell Crowe is a dick for doing that. But the person that ruined the relationship is Meg Ryan. She ruined the relationship.
She's going to double down.
I am doubling down. And by the way, in other situations where it is the man who cheats, okay? Question. I'll ask you like this. I watched the Tiger Woods documentary, right?
Okay.
I watched the Tiger Woods documentary on the plane. Did Rachel Yucatel ruin Tiger Woods' marriage? No. She didn't. Tiger Woods is married. It is Tiger Woods' responsibility to look after the health of his relationship. It is simply not her responsibility. Would it be nice in a completely perfect world if people wouldn't do things that would have unintended consequences on other people, like Elon or Dennis Quaid? Or the woman's fiance in the Drake situation? Sure. Sure they would. It would be great. But the reality is that some people look at it like, yo, I'm single. I'm going to get into the relationship with the person. I don't care about the other side. Everybody, people should be better than that. But whose responsibility is it to look after your relationship? What are we talking about? I stand
correct.
On it.
And that's the responsibility that that person has. But then the other person, who's the third party in the situation, has responsibility as well. If they know the person is in a committed relationship.
I don't agree now, with that.
I know you don't. And we don't have to rehash it.
Well, no,
but
no,
if
no.
you were telling me, if you were telling me that Meg Ryan was looking at porn, and you consider that cheating, but the porn star has no idea that this person is cheating
it's not,
on.
It's not working. It's not working.
Some people consider porn cheating. Watching porn cheating.
Don't.
There are people that consider that. Yeah. I know that, but there are people that consider that a form of cheating. I'm saying that's not the same thing as that porn star has no idea that this person is watching them and cheating on their significant other. This is a situation where the person knows that this person's in a committed relationship and still embarks on.
Wait. We're getting things confused. This is where we're getting things confused.
No.
I'm not talking about right or wrong. I'm talking about responsible for the relationship. No one outside of your relationship. I'm sorry. No one outside of your relationship is responsible for the sanctity of your relationship. No one outside of, is it wrong? Yes, but when we talk about blame for a relationship, it doesn't matter, male, female, whatever. No one outside of your relationship is responsible for the sanctity and integrity of your relationship. That's giving the outside world too much responsibility over what's going on in your house.
If you're talking about responsibility in a general sense, then sure. But when it comes to if that person, that outside person knows you're in a relationship, and like there's a lot of things to assume. Assuming that person pursues you knowing that you're in a committed relationship, assuming that person knows that they have some sort of power over you or some like they can give you something and they pursue you. There's certain levels to it. And that's what I was saying with the Drake situation. He has a level of power over her. I'm not saying she's not responsible. I said 50-50. There are certain things that she's responsible for. There are certain things that she's responsible for. And there's certain things that that other person is responsible for. I'm not saying they have the same responsibility, but there is a level of it. And I think that level is 50-50.
So let me tell you what this really is about for me. When I say that I view women as equals, like I mean that. I don't mean that in a sense of I view women and men as equals in every single way, besides things that a societal power matrix has perverted. So a societal power matrix has made certain double standards for men and women, actually not double standards. They actually are the standard. And that makes sense, right? But to me, in a situation like this, you are teetering on the edge of treating that woman like a toddler who is powerless to say no to Drake or to not enter into a relationship with Drake or to not cheat on her fiance. There gets a point to where like she gets denied agency. She gets denied all of those things because we're looking to give her an out because she can't. If the situation were reversed, if the situation were reversed, there is absolutely zero. We would not be having this conversation. If the situation were reversed and Rihanna called some dude out there, right? Like some young hot guy and mm-hmm. She wanted to work with him, right? And called him out to London, Barbados, whatever. And he had a fiance and he slept with Rihanna. You guys are living in a fantasy world. If you're telling me right now that we will be having this same conversation.
I totally think if that fiance then blasted Rihanna Brianna being who she is, we absolutely would have the same conversation. This is what I will tell you what you're doing.
No. People in that situation, no doubt about the fact that there would be chauvinists and men out there who would make Rihanna look bad. No, for sure. But the reality is that in this situation, women, by and large, the women that I know, would not be taken up for the man saying that she had so much power over him that he had no choice but to sleep with Rihanna.
My answer would still be the same. I would say it's 50-50. And I think that you're turning it into a gender specific thing. So with you, like going back to the original thing that we were talking about, people, it sounds like in the Thought Warriors community, we're making it seem like you aren't for women. I never took it that way. Because I think that if the situation were reversed, you would have the same opinion. Just like I think if the situation were reversed, I would have the same opinion. So it's just what was done. It's not who's doing it. That's what I stand by.
So to me, I'll tell you guys this. It really, in terms of a relationship, I get it. Everybody should respect all of the relationships. Everyone should respect everybody that's in a relationship mm-hmm. from the outside of a relationship. But the question mm-hmm. you should ask yourself about your spouse or whoever you're dating is what happens when they don't? What happens when they don't? When they say, I don't care. When they say, I don't care, your spouse or whoever you're with still has to make a decision about how they're going to view your relationship. And that decision about whether or not to respect that relationship is 100% on who you're in bed with. It's 100% on them. It's 100% their responsibility to not go outside of the relationship. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who it is. Now, if we get information that Drake said, hey, by the way, just let you know, I gotta have sex with people who I'm working with, you know, so I gotta do this or whatever. Like, we're assuming that he used his power.
A lot of things. Yes.
But my point is, if that's the case, then Drake can't have sex with anybody because everybody he fucks, he's still Drake. Everybody he fucks, he's Drake. And whoever's fucking Drake, there's some gain in it. It might be.
Is there? You yeah. think there's some. So it.
No, I'm not saying everybody. No. I'm not saying that they think that there's some gain in it, but there is some gain in it. Having sex with Drake, there's gain in that.
Bragging rights? What is the gain?
Access. You're gonna be able to go to play. You're gonna be able to go places you weren't able
so
to go.
So you think everybody that Drake messes with gets access to things? Are you kidding me?
Well, I would say that, well, first of all, there are certain things that I think, and then there are certain things that I know.
Okay? I get that.
All right. And
but
so,
everybody. No.
I'm not saying everyone. But what
okay,
I'm saying is...
Okay, I'm sure saying, there's some.
What I'm saying is, I would imagine that the majority of them at least get to kick it with the crew, at least get to come on the bus, at least get to
sure they're down the they're down and, for whatever
but and some of them they're different. And by the way, good on them. Like, if you want to
if
have
that's
sex
what
with
they
you,
want
if
right
you
if
have
that's
sex
what
with
they
your favorite
do.
Rapper and hang out with the crew and just whatever, that's completely okay.
This is how conversations turn. I'm not saying it's not. Because, the way you just responded to that makes it seem like I'm judging them for doing that. The first thing I said was, not everybody gets access. This isn't turning into good for them. Good for them. Who cares? My response is to, not all of them are getting some type of better access just because they had sex with Drake.
They're not. But even if the access is just access to him.
I don't even think they get that. Not all of them. Well, not all of them. I'm sorry. Not all of them. Let me specify.
Even if it's just, he's not fucking them in the alleys. So they're at least coming to a hotel. But there's access to a part of him or even anybody that.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is even if you're friends with Drake, even if you know Drake, there's going to be something just with his, how big his star is, to where you feel like that's better than not being the other way for a lot of people, or even in the whole LA scene. And so I'm saying is that, like, it's hard for him to have a normal interaction with anyone at any time when you're that big of a star. When you're that big of a star, it's difficult to have any type of a normal interaction.
I'm sure it's difficult, but if you're also putting yourself in situations with people who are messing with you just to gain some sort of access, or you're putting yourself in a situation where being with somebody who has a fiance, I'm sure you're making things a lot more difficult for yourself than they already are.
Well, I don't think he looks at it as being difficult. I just put it to you like this. We can get off this. Look, you guys, I love y'all. I really do love you guys. But the reality is that there are certain things that I just actually believe. And one of them is, it's just not anybody's responsibility outside of your relationship to take care of your relationship. It's not.
That responsibility, yes, lands on the person that's in it. I will give you that. My definition was different. There's different types of responsibility is what I said. But okay. You know.
All right, it's whatever. Hey, love you guys over at the Higher Learning.
So you're sexist.
And by the way, maybe I am. And by the way, but I think though that I will say this though about that. There is something to be, if you, sometimes men do cloak sexism in this everything has to be equal mantra, right? Because sometimes they use that to overlook obvious differences in society. They'll say, hey, the men and women are completely equal. So if a woman slaps a man, he should be able to turn around and punch her dead in her shit. I mean, seriously.
I know they do.
They'll say stuff like that and you'll be like, come on, dog. Like, seriously. But the way I look at this is like in decision-making situations, I really believing in equality, and this is a weird way, believing in equality to me is not how you treat somebody like when you first meet them. It's how you treat them when you view them as fucked up. So to me, equality is, okay, I'm now, it's in the application of consequence. Because all the other things, looking at somebody and not judging them when you see them, that's bullshit. Like, everybody's gonna make a judgment about somebody when they see them. Your brain processes so many things about a. I remember I was on a train one time and I saw this white dude on the train, and he had his head shaved, and he had a tattoo around his neck of a slit and then blood running down the neck. And on the top of the tattoo, it said lifer. I don't know how I'm not supposed to judge that guy. I really don't want to judge him, but like I remember I was playing SOCOM on my PS, the little place, the handheld PlayStation. I forget what you even call it. I was playing SOCOM on it, and I saw this dude coming, and my brain went, get ready, because you might have to fuck this guy up. Here he comes. It's the guy with the lifer tattoo. I ended up talking to him, and he was cool as shit. Right? He was cool as shit. I was like, I asked him about the tattoo, and he was like, yeah, man, I'm actually going out to California. We were on the train to get the tattoo covered. Right? right? To get it covered or removed or whatever. He's going to some guy in Beverly Hills. He had spent all of his money on the actual procedure, so he couldn't afford a plane ticket to get out there.
Oh my gosh.
It's a great story. Great story. I actually wrote about it. Great story. But I'm going to judge him. I'm going to judge that guy. The question is, like, how do you treat someone actually after they've done something fucked up or after they've showed you they're human? If you treat people equally after that, that's true equality. So my thing is, women can fuck up in relationships. Men can fuck up in relationships. Men have no responsibilities in relationships that women don't have. And women have no responsibilities in relationships that men don't have. Men can be fucked up and shit, and so can women. And so can women. And if you fly up to Toronto and you fuck Drake when you've been in a relationship for 8 years, you're all fucked up.
And the thing is, and that's what, it's just a lot of assuming. We don't know what the status of their relationship. That's him saying that they were engaged. We don't even know if they really were, if they were on the ends, if they had some type of arrangement. Who knows? Listen, Van isn't sexist, and he's not a misogynist. Next topic.
Every man is a little bit, though.
Great.
Every man is a little bit.
So he is, y'all. So he is.
Every man is a little bit. Fine. You can lower the percentage. We're just trying to get to, because we start off on the wrong side of it.
What percentage are you?
Since
you love to throw out percentages, what percentage are you?
What percentage misogynist am I? I would say 6. And
60?
6, not 60. I would say 6.
That's a random number.
I'll tell you why it's 6. Because 94%, it's a low A.
Okay.
It's a low A. My goal is to continue to learn until I get to like 97. I don't think you can be more than 97. Because to be more than 97 and be a man, I'll be honest with you, the society is too sexist. It's patriarchy, the whole thing. And they teach you as a kid that you can go out and conquer the whole world and some woman's going to be behind you washing your dishes. It takes a long time to unlearn that. Anyway.
Well, okay, 6%. So sometimes that 6% comes out, you guys. Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it comes out. And look, to be honest with you, white people listening to this, if you could get to 6% racist, I'm fucking with you. I'll be honest with you. I'm okay with that. If you could get to 6% racist, I'm cool with it. But a lot of y'all think y'all at 6%. A lot of y'all, I'll tell you right now, if you think that you're 0, you're 25. Yeah. I can tell you right now. if someone asks you a question, I have this game that I play with employees at the Ringer where I'll ask them, I'll be like, I played this game with Steven, one of the podcast producers, and I'm sure that Bill and Juliet will be fucking thrilled to hear that I do this to the coworkers. I go, yo, how many times have you said the N-word in your life? And then some people will be like, I can't remember actually ever saying it. And I'll be like, you've said the N-word a minimum of 6,000 times in your life if you're going to tell me it's 0. If you're going to tell me it's 0, then you're like a fucking Tarantino movie. Because if you look and you say, I'd say probably like 500 to 1,000. I'm like, okay, that means it's probably 3,000. Because it's like, you know, the same thing. They're bringing it down. It's probably nigga, 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 nigga. But if you say 0, you're hiding something. You can't. You're white and you like rap.
I'll agree with the 0. You can't say 0. It's like saying I don't see color. It's the same people. You're racist.
You see color, nigga. You see the tattoo on that dude's neck. You see it. And it's scary. It's okay. The question, it's okay to be scared by the tattoo. It's okay.
Why have we done majority of the podcast already talking about
I'm sorry. All right.
This is the podcast. This is it.
Oh, okay. So this is the deal. We're going to get into the actual podcast. I'm sorry. I love you, Higher Learning Reddit. Love you guys. Can't even believe that there's a Reddit based around this podcast. You guys are so amazing. We're going to now talk to Brittany Ramos de Barros, who is running for a Republican. She's running for a Senate, a Congress seat in New York. She's running against the Republican, one of the more fascinating young political figures right there on the landscape. We're going to talk to her after this break. So stick around with us.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Higher Learning, we're about to introduce you to one of the future political stars of the United States of America, okay? Look, you gotta lean into that, Brittany.
Brittany, you gotta. I have to stop like giggling when people say that and just be like, yeah, of course I am.
Yes, yes. She is running for Congress in New York's only Republican-held district, District 11, which is Staten Island and South Brooklyn, which you wouldn't think would be Republican, but I guess, you know, it still is. Her name is Brittany Ramos DeBarros, and we are happy to have her on Higher Learning today. Brittany, thank you for joining us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You are only 32, yet you've decided to jump into the arena of politics. I'm looking at your bio here, and like I said before, it makes me, you know, feel like I haven't done enough. Like you've been in war, you've been so many different things, and now you're running for Congress. What made you decide at this point in your life that you had to be a politician?
Well, you know, I mean, the political types keep telling me that I'm supposed to say like a fancier answer than this, but the truth is because people ask me to. I did not plan to run for office. I'm an organizer. I organize vets, and we speak out about the wars and in service of social justice issues. And that's kind of where my sights were set. And that's the work I've been doing for the last several years. But, you know, last go around, we had a Democrat, and I think a lot of movement folks were really hopeful about how that would go. And he felt that he needed to swing to the right really hard when he got elected and made, you know, alienated a lot of people and really disappointed a lot of communities. And then we ended up with this person who is still running I Stand With Trump ads. She voted against the election results. Our district is the hardest hit by COVID, and she voted against COVID relief. Like, not even that politically complicated, right? Like, COVID relief. And so folks came to me and were like, look, we want to prove that someone like you, a woman of color, an organizer, a vet, is not just the better strategy, is the strategy to be unapologetic about fighting for our communities and really energize our base. And I talked to a lot of folks, and I was surprised by how many people were like, yeah, let's do it. And so here we are.
You said you were asked to run. But my question then is, why you then? Why do you think they chose you? Because there are other activists, there are other people who are outspoken, but the community believes you'd be the best one to run for this seat. Why you?
Yeah, I think that there were a few reasons. I mean, I've been asking myself the same question, but I think it's because of the way that I show up. I've been told a lot that I show up as very accountable, very, you know, kind of collaborative in the way that I approach leadership. And even, you know, in this campaign, I've repeated over and over, even in just the 2 months that we've been live, I've said, you know, I'm so honored to hold the torch, but this is really about building a campaign that is about our collective agenda for our communities, you know, and that's what I want this to be. Is I want me, you know, I want that this campaign to be something that people see themselves in, you know, and I think that there are a lot of things about me that allow a lot of different types of folks to see themselves in me and in my journey, you know, between being biracial and my military experience, but also being involved in movement and, you know, growing up struggling and, you know, all of those things. I think that there's a lot of those kinds of things, but I think that that's one of the reasons. The other thing is because we have a growing chorus of folks who are really working class champions, but there's not an explicitly anti-war vet that is elected to office right now that is really unapologetic about saying, yes, I'm a veteran. Yes, I had this experience. And the best, the most American values aligned thing that we could do is end these wars and challenge the logic that has left us spending trillions and trillions of dollars on violence at the while people are dying because they can't afford healthcare.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I happen to believe that the biggest embezzlement in the history of the world is the money that is essentially embezzled through the military industrial complex. The fact that everybody is getting fat off the hog.
Yep.
Through the military industrial complex.
Ooh,
and the reality of it is, if we're being honest, we need endless wars to make sure that those people continue to have a reason to spend money and make each other rich. I had a friend tell me about the program that the Navy has to train dolphins to find bombs. Look, I'm sure that's important, but I'm gonna be honest with you. It's just probably far less important than making sure some of these kids have food and we have nice roles and functioning schools and things like that. You rarely see a veteran who's willing to come out and talk about the fact that we're overspending in the military. I guess what I would want you to do is take us quickly to what you thought the armed forces were when you joined them and what they actually are.
Yeah. Yeah. So my mom was an Army officer. I grew up in a conservative military family. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, struggling growing up. And so wanted to figure out a way where I wouldn't feel like I was a burden to my family. And I wanted to serve. And I was I was a competitive debater. And so my horizons were starting to expand politically already by the time I was graduating high school. But at the time, they were debating kind of women in combat and don't ask, don't tell on the news. And I thought, okay, so the real problems are just leadership problems, right? We need different types of leaders who are willing to join, and then we can really fix the problems. And so that's kind of how I rationalized it to myself. That and believing, you know, the Laura Bushes and the others of the world that said that we were there to help save Afghan women and protect the Afghan people, right? And so I signed a contract at 18 that I wouldn't be free of until I was 30. And I say that really intentionally because most folks don't know that that's how that works, that one of our only federal pay for college or scholarship job programs requires kids, right? Your brain's not even fully formed to agree to kill for the government in order to pay for college. Like, we should name that, right? We should say that that's what it is instead of cloaking it in all of this flashy, you know, kind of euphemisms. So even by the time I graduated in 2011, the wars had become more and more unpopular. Obama had run on ending the wars. So by the time I deployed, I graduated, I became a platoon leader at 22, responsible for 40 lives, and already had deployment orders before I graduated. And so I knew I was going straight to war. But again, I believed Obama and Biden when they said, okay, we're doing this just transition, you know, we're gonna leave. And I thought that, okay, I'm a part of the transition process to make sure that we do right by the Afghan people. And so when I went there, I really thought that I was going to like help protect people. And I think that we really play up this idea of people who want to serve and protect and fight for freedom. And yet when I got there, it was impossible to deny that we were doing so much more harm than good.
How, why, what'd you see?
I spent a lot of time with Afghan families. But I think a lot of what I saw was on our side of things, right? It was like, on one hand, I would be in briefings with other officers and kind of a true believer, right, in this mission of we're supposed to be handing things off, we're supposed to be winning hearts and minds, minimizing violence. And you would have commanders like, all right, tomorrow we're going to do a night raid on this village. And I would just be like, wait, what? That's not our mission. Why? You know? And they were like, well, they're not cooperating. And I was like, again, regardless, not our mission. And second, if they're not cooperating, it's because they're terrified. How would raiding their village, armed to the teeth and terrorizing people, solve that problem? Right? Like, how does that even address the problem that you're naming? It just became so clear that you had all of these people who on some level, especially officers and leaders like that, that just wanted to play like role play Call of Duty. Basically, they wanted to get their stripes. They wanted to, you know, be able to put on their resume that they were some kind of war hero and paint themselves that way. And that they saw the real shit, you know. And then on the other hand, I looked around and you have contractors all over the country making hundreds of thousands of dollars to kind of be positioned. You have troops guarding opium fields. You have, you know, and so it just raised a lot of questions of what are we really doing here? And the other thing was that because I spent a lot of time with Afghan civilians, I realized in hindsight how racist our cultural awareness training had been. We had gotten this like check the box army like cultural awareness class before we went. But even at the end of that class, the guy was like, but at the end of the day, come home. And it just really promoted this culture of kind of violence. And I think I came home really confused about what was going on at a bigger level than what I could see. But I knew that things didn't add up. And I knew that, you know, I think the first takeaway I had was like, even if this is the right mission, you cannot take an institution that is fundamentally designed to maximize violence and use it to create safe, healthy communities. You can't do that.
Mm. You gave a very, very powerful speech back in 2018 at a rally. And you said this quote, you said a bunch of great things, but you said this: there can be no true economic, racial, or gender justice without addressing the militarism that is strangling the empathy and morality out of our society. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So when I talk about militarism, I'm talking about a system of logic is really what I'm talking about. And currently in our society, we don't even notice it because it's the air we breathe. So especially if you've never been exposed to anything else, you don't have any contrast to see that that's something pretty particular to our society, is that we assume all strength, all safety, all security, everything is achieved through the projection of force and only through the projection of force. And one example that I gave that I give sometimes when I'm trying to break it down is like, think about it. If I walked up to someone and was like, let's say it was like a beefy, like man, right? And I was like, hey, I'm stronger than you. The assumption in most people's minds in that dialogue would be that I'm saying that I'm physically stronger than that person. And that's understandable. But what we don't realize is that's very specific to our cultural context, is that we literally have such blinders that we only see strength through the ability to project physical force. And so when I say that everything from our policing to our approach to immigration, to our approach to trying to create peace and safety globally, is through the attempt to project force endlessly, which is why it's like, I mean, we have 800 military bases around the world, right? The entire rest of the world combined has about 70, right? And there's so many ways to just break it down, like how far ahead we are, right, by our own kind of understanding. And yet we still have this culture where it's never enough. There's a threat around every corner because that's the way that we're conditioned to think. And, you know, my point is that as long as that's the way that we're thinking, we'll continue to operate in this kind of scarcity, threat around every corner mindset, instead of thinking about the ways that we can invest proactively in the things that we know by the evidence actually cultivate safe, healthy communities, which are investments in education, healthcare, protecting the environment, and economic stability. All things that war destroys, by the way.
Why were American troops guarding opium fields in Afghanistan?
Question you should ask the military-industrial complex, I guess, that all of us should be asking. But, you know, not to be sarcastic, but I just think that there's a lot of these things that, you know, I don't have any concrete answer, evidence-based answer. But what I can tell you is that the United States strategy was, okay, we have to create like an economic, it was sold to people under the guise of like, we're trying to help Afghanistan get on its feet economically. So they were like, oh, so what we're going to do is support you in the cultivation of poppy, right? In the ingredients that go into pharmaceuticals, opioid pharmaceuticals.
And it's heroin.
Right. Which, but the deal was that there was infrastructure created for a supply pipeline for then US pharmaceutical companies, which then turned around and overprescribed and pumped those into our communities and veterans who were suffering from PTSD and all kinds of, you know, what I really try more and more to describe as moral injury that comes from believing that you were going to, you know, fight for something just and good and realizing you were kind of a pawn in someone's profit scheme.
And it's non-controversial. Like anybody that had been to Afghanistan would say that they saw American troops guarding opium fields in Afghanistan.
I mean, I could probably give you like 3 references at least of people who did the guarding themselves. Yeah. Who I didn't know in my military service. I only met after the fact.
Wow. Andrew Yang is running for mayor of New York City. That's a sharp turn.
It's a sharp turn.
Look, that's what happens. Sometimes my turns are so sharp, Brittany, that you hear the whoosh, whoosh.
I'm with you. I had a little bit of a whiplash.
Brittany, I've never heard it.
I gotta be honest with you. I had to play that heroin thing feel to the end because you're gonna get my koofy wears. Shout out to all my koofy wearing homies out there. When they hear that, their eyes gonna glow. That's gonna give a lot of people gonna be into that. Anyway, Andrew Yang says that New York City can't afford to defund the police.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, sorry. It's just, I mean, I know that a lot of people haven't heard this that much, but I feel like I'm just like, I don't know how many more ways I or other people can say this. Like, we literally magically find money for anything that has to do with surveillance. I mean, New York City just like rolled out their first pilot of like robo police dogs in the Bronx or some shit like that. Yeah. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then we had to like advocate because our local DA here in Staten Island got facial recognition software and they were, you know, supposedly preparing this, you know, super high tech rollout. I mean, you know, like these are just 2 of the multi-million dollar projects, potentially approaching billion-dollar projects that we magically have money for. But, you know, I think that the other thing that folks like that don't take into consideration is that we're talking about proactive investment up front. And so it's not that we're just saying, you know, suddenly there will be no police and no any, you know, no infrastructure. But what we're saying is right now, police are honestly, I mean, I'm going to get in trouble with some of my friends for this, but this is what I really think. I really think that what we don't talk about enough is that police are set up to fail too, the same way that troops are in a lot of ways. And that doesn't excuse the violence and all the fucked up things that happen, right? And there are serious needs for real accountability and reform. But what we don't talk about enough is, you know, you take these folks and you train them like a military, and then you go tell them, respond to mental health crises, respond to domestic violence disputes.
You're right.
Respond to these things that are ultimately economically charged issues, right? Public health issues, overdoses, right? All of these things. And it's just, that's not what their job is. Like legally, that's not even, right? Like the courts literally ruled that the job of police is not actually to keep people safe and they have no responsibility to intervene legally in a situation to keep people safe. And so what we're saying is that in order to actually cultivate safety, we have to confront that fact, and we have to be willing to invest in the things that actually address those things from a place of care and public health.
Mm. So I feel like with everything going on in our society, a lot of people look at politics and they're completely disenchanted, and they don't have faith. They believe in something someone says, and then that politician will go back and say something different. We're going to talk about this later on the podcast about Clyburn. For the people who are disenchanted, how do we have faith in this broken system of politics? You're running for Congress. You obviously have some form of hope to be running and wanting to make a difference on the issues that you stand on and what you believe in. How do we believe in it?
Yeah. I mean, I think my answer to most folks is we don't try to believe in this broken system. I think that what we really need is to strategize and build momentum in our communities that is about us and our power as working class people coming together and saying that this political structure that we have was never designed to serve people like us. Mm-hmm. And it does everything that it can to lock people like me and other, you know, like I said, working class champions that are in the Congress now from being able to access that power, marginalizes them, right? Even when they're in those seats of power. And so, you know, the place that I come from is just leveling with people that, yes, this system is broken. And so when we, you know, that's partly why I also said yes to running, is because I believe that more and more our movements, our communities should be drafting people who we already have a relationship, who we know are not, this isn't their career aspiration. It's not something that they're doing because they're trying to climb or become famous or something like that. But they're part of a strategy that is bigger than that one campaign or that one election or that one seat. And I think that that's really what it's about, is about stepping into our power instead of playing into and depending on those who hold the power now. Because the kind of Democratic Party establishment has been loyal to corporations and is as guilty as, you know, kind of be their ties to the military industrial complex, speaking of, right, as the Republican Party. And there are really important differences that, you know, especially that we've seen in Trump era that we shouldn't wash over. But we still need to understand the power, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want a more polite version of white supremacy. I want to dismantle a system of white supremacy.
Mm. Yeah.
My last question for you is maybe the most important question, because you're trying to represent Staten Island. Okay. And, there's a lot of people that are going to be listening from Staten Island right now that are going to want to know your answer to this. In your opinion, what is the single greatest Wu-Tang Clan song of all time?
That's where you were going with this. So first of all, Shaolin represent for all my Staten Islanders out there.
Shaolin.
Oh man, see, this is probably one of the most loaded political questions I could be asked. Right. Like, people care more about this than my like policy positions, probably. They do. Here.
Shaolin. Rest in peace, ODB.
I'm gonna go with A Better Tomorrow because it's inspirational and I feel like it goes along with the you know, our hopes and dreams for the future, but while keeping it real about where we're at now, you know.
It's not bad. Not bad. I mean, next time somebody asks you, don't be keeping gangster with you. Next time somebody asks you, just say Cream.
Just say what?
Just say Cream.
Cream.
Right? And you could even spin Cream into a political answer. You could say, look, cash rules everything around me. That's why I'm trying to take the cash and put it in the hands of the American people and not in the hands of the military industrial complex. Before we get off, do you want to say anything negative about your opponent? I know, you know, you're a politician and that's what you guys do. You get out there, say something negative, say, you know.
There have been, I am all about, we have to build a vision, but look, I'm also like, this is a fight, baby. We don't have time for, you know, for kid gloves. So,
right.
You know, I'm here to say that my opponent has literally never held a job other than a political job. Mm. And it shows that she helped inspire, I just know that there's going to come a day where someone's like, Britney spoke out about the military, like, she's un-American. And I'm just going to be like, well, only one of us helped inspire an insurrection against the U.S. government. And it wasn't me.
Yeah.
That, by the way, got cops killed. You know, if folks are coming from that angle. She takes all this money from developers who are just gentrifying Staten Island like crazy. She voted against the Equality Act. Like, how are you going to vote against the Equality Act?
Yeah.
That's the most, like, vanilla flavor, you know, of all the words, like, equity, justice, right? Equality is the most, like,
right,
accessible, right? The bottom, you know, like, the bare minimum. And she's
like, one of the people that boos Amazing Grace at the talent show.
I'm
like, how you going to boo Jesus? Like, what you, like, how you going, like, at least let the girl sing. Right. Brittany, I got to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you something. You're going to be a political star, and I'll tell you why. I'm serious. I'm serious about this. Because this wasn't boring. And one of my main problems with politicians right now is no one speaks to Americans with authority and plain speak and charisma to where people feel like they're talking to a human being and not a political automaton or you know what I mean? Just like a machine. So I am watching your career with great interest. That's what Emperor Palpatine told Anakin Skywalker. And I'll tell you that now. And
oh, God.
That's what he told him. Remember that? I'm watching your career with great interest.
Brittany, we are excited about you. We are happy that you came on our show. How can we support you? Where can people find you and follow everything that you're doing?
Thank you. Well, one is just we're starting early because we really want to build momentum and really organize folks that do feel disenfranchised and checked out of the system, you know, and build excitement. And so in order to do that and in order, you know, like I said, this system is not built for people like me to run, right? I'm still working a full-time job. It's crazy. So, but, you know, but the more that folks help with, you know, fundraising, volunteering, all of those different things, spreading the word, the more time I get to spend actually where I want to be with people in the community, kind of building our agenda together and that momentum to not just flip this district, but finally hold it. We've had a new rep here every 2 years for over a decade. And so we're looking to change that. And we need folks' help getting the word out. Chip in, even if it's $5, $10 a month, you can do that. Goes a long way. It builds a grassroots base of support for us. We're not taking any corporate PAC money. So that goes a long way. And the last thing is just, you know, get involved with campaigns like mine, whether they're at the city council level. You know, New York has city council and mayoral races coming up. So folks should make sure to vote, make sure you're registered. And get involved because this system as it's currently, you know, built isn't going to save us, but it impacts our lives every single day. And so we have to be drafting and running and really supporting candidates that actually have skin in the game and come out of our communities. And so if folks are curious about ways to do any of those things, our website is Brittany, my name, Brittany, for congress.org, all spelled out normally.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Higher Learning. Yes, appreciate
you. Thank you so much for having me, y'all.
Of course. Of course,
can't wait. Great work.
Take care. You too.
That was dope.
She's great. Great. Didn't know much about her before. Now I want to know everything about her. Isn't that how you feel?
Opium. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Okay.
I'm telling you. Fucking opium. They got opium going on out there. Opium and we're protecting it? Mm-hmm. All right, so fuck the Democrats. It's officially fuck the Democrats. It's officially fuck the Democrats. I want to say, do I have a camera? Where does it say? Hey, fuck the Democrats. I'm right there. I'm sorry.
The Democrats or the Democratic Party? There's no difference.
We're playing with the Democrats too much. We're playing with them. I am as left as you can possibly get. I'm a couple of stops before socialist, right? I am a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. I am. But as a structure and a party, I have got to say, fuck the Democrats. The Democrats are not learning. They're not reading the tea leaves in American society. They're not. Okay. A couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week, we had Kamala Harris say that America is not a racist country. Okay. Now, we talked about that here on the podcast and why that type of framing and saying that right, something like that, actually gives cover to white supremacy. That was one thing. This, what I read, is actually much more egregious. Okay. House Majority Whip James E. Clyburn. Jim Clyburn, you know who he is. Jim Clyburn, in my opinion, is single-handedly responsible for Joe Biden being the president.
Right.
He's from down there in South Carolina. Joe Biden was on the ropes. He was on the ropes. And what did Whip Clyburn do? He whipped up the black people in South Carolina, which then cascaded into black people all over America getting behind Joe Biden. All the rest of the party fell in line, and Joe Biden was able to go and capture the White House. Now, there's a nationwide conversation over police reform. You guys know we've talked about it here on Higher Learning. The George Floyd Policing Act has a part in it that addresses qualified immunity. Rachel, would you like to explain to people what qualified immunity is?
Qualified immunity, it's something that largely shields government officials, including police officers, from liability on the for conduct on the job unless they violate a clearly established constitutional right. It is extremely hard to prove the burden. It's an affirmative defense. And the Supreme Court has ruled in several cases and has continually narrowed the review of it and made it harder and harder, almost more so becoming absolute immunity from any conduct, which is why it's such an issue.
Okay, so brilliant. So qualified immunity is what Tim Scott of South Carolina, same state as Whip Clyburn, has said is the poison pill of this. This is literally the most important thing in the bill. Mm-hmm. It's literally the most important thing. It allows us as citizens to hold police officers personally liable for the things that they do. And it is something that could hit directly at the heart of police departments and individual officers. Now, even with that being said, most of the time that these police departments are sued, it's not even the officers themselves that end up paying this stuff.
Correct.
So if you're thinking that qualified immunity means you're going to go out and bankrupt a bunch of the old Joes walking a beat in your neighborhood, that's probably not even true. But the reality of it is it would drop the cloth of us being able to get to police officers and hold them personally responsible for these things. Exactly. It might run the costs up on some of these suits so much to where the police departments change the way they cover their officers and the indemnification that goes on. Okay. It is incredibly important. It's the whole point. I read a headline where Jim Clyburn says that qualified immunity is not the whole ball of wax. I'll tell you what it says right here. Rep. Clyburn says qualified immunity doesn't have to be a part of policing reform bill. Fuck if it doesn't. You guys think that Van, and in his anxiety and in his entire warped mind, has made this into a big deal. I hit some people up. Some very smart people. Some people that you know who they are. They talk this shit all day long on television. And I asked them, I'm gonna read you verbatim the back and forth. I had this guy, if I told you who he was, I won't do that. But this guy, if I told you who he was, you guys would live and die by his opinion on this. Does the bill have any teeth without qualified immunity? No, was the answer. It's performative. Must have the database, lower criminal standard, and qualified immunity. Has to have all three of those things. My question is, how long are we going to do this with the Democrats? And I'm not just talking about black people. I'm talking about anyone who considers themselves to be a liberal. How long are we going to do this same old show and tell precedentation with the Democrats? how long are we going to do this magic trick with them?
I will tell you, there are not many things that shock me when it comes, like, even when we talked about Kamala last week or whenever that was. I said, I'm not surprised that she said it. She's going in a roundabout way of saying it, but she won't say it. I did not expect to hear him say that there would be no qualified immunity. And then to add to it, when he was being interviewed, said, I don't want to sacrifice the good for something to try to get something to be perfect.
I will never sacrifice good on the altar of perfect. I just won't do that.
This is getting the bill isn't even perfection. Let's just be clear right there. Passing those through things, that's not perfection. That's just fighting for what's right. It's not perfection, right? Because if we had perfection, we wouldn't even have to do any of this. But but what came after that is what he said. He said, we might not get it this go around, but we'll fight for it later.
Fuck,
I'm paraphrasing.
That, man. We can't do that.
It's never gonna happen.
Like, we can't do that.
That's the worst part. The fact that you said we'll fight for it later, why not now?
If we don't
the fact that you push this off, you know it's never happening, and you know you won't even probably be in Congress or a part of it to have to fight for it again. The fact that you are saying this will happen later lets me know you don't care about getting this done. We stood so strongly just a few months ago talking about how necessary it is to have qualified immunity. That's what makes this bill so different than anything that's been put forward before. The fact that the one thing the Republicans don't want is the qualified immunity because of what it represents, because of how powerful that would be to have that stripped from police departments or government officials. You have to hit them where it hurts. It has to make a difference. The system is so messed up in regards to the grand jury system and the prosecutors that fight within it, and they work hand in hand with the police officers. What could take that power away? Is qualified immunity.
You guys, I don't want you to take this from me. I swear, I want you to go out and do your own research on this. I don't want you guys to take this from us. This bill has got to have qualified immunity in it. The reason why this frustration is so palpable is because we're asking you for one thing. I understand Tim Scott. I get who Tim Scott is. I know Tim Scott is a cog in the wheel of the Republican and conservative machine. I get that. I know a lot of people who know Tim Scott say Tim Scott's a good guy. All right? Tim Scott and Jim Clyburn and the rest of them, I need them to be niggas first right here. And I'm using that word in a real way, because everything else, the classy route is not fucking getting through to these guys. All right? Maybe we don't need a black person to go in there and get something for black people. Maybe we need a couple niggas to come get it. A couple people that don't care about how they're perceived. A couple people that's willing to go in there and grab a situation by the nuts and get to it for the people. A couple of people that's on the ground in these communities enough to know how they feel about things. Maybe we got too many Negroes in these positions. And I'm being serious. I am livid that we would be having this conversation after what we've been through.
Yep.
I'm livid that he would say something like this. I'm livid.
Well, because he didn't have to, Van. There's no reason for him to do this.
Rachel, there's a reason. There is a reason why he's doing it. He's fattening us up for the fact that they're going to take it out. That the only reason why this kind of statement would be made this publicly is he's fattening us up for the fact that they're taking it out.
But let me, I understand that, but why not continue fighting for this bill, for everything?
Because they don't think
that,
because it has nothing to do with us. It has to do with politics, right?
No, that's what I want you to say.
They don't think that they can get Manchin, who's an abomination in West Virginia, and some of the other guys they need to get on board to actually get it passed. But they still forget about wanting people safe in the streets. They want points on the board. And because they want points on the board, they want it, as my homeboy said, something performative. Well, what we need It's for the cops to stop blowing people's heads off. What that's what we need, and choking them to death. And so what we need is actual change. And the Democrats, who we keep lining up to support, once again are getting to the precipice and are demonstrating to us in an outward way that they're not willing to fight for actual change.
Correct.
That they're not willing to go to the mattresses for us. So I got to say, fuck them.
Yeah. Go out, as Vance said, go out and look for it yourself. Let me tell you something. It's very simple. All you're asking for is for people to be responsible for their actions. That's it. And if you take that away, that allows you to, these police officers that continue to attack people of color, this is asking them to be responsible for exactly what it is that they're doing. Stop protecting them. That's it. That to me is a very simple concept.
Look, I'll be honest with you guys. Mama, I'm sorry for the N-word usage. I told you I would try to stop. I'm sorry.
Did you tell her? You've been on it a lot lately.
I've been using the N-word more?
Yeah.
For it?
Cursing, N-word. Yeah, yeah.
That means I just need to check in with the judge.
I know. Well, we can have a monthly check-in.
Okay, you guys, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got a little excited. I'll keep it clean as much as I fucking can for the rest of the podcast. But look, seriously, in a real way, this isn't about content. This isn't about podcasting. This isn't about anything that has to do with how you guys are perceiving. This is about the reality that we're living in. And that is so disrespectful. Clyburn ought to be ashamed of himself. He should apologize. That is so disrespectful to the family of George Floyd. It's so disrespectful to the family of Breonna Taylor. So disrespectful to the family of Tamir Rice, to the family of all of the people that this movement is based on. How long are we going to let these people die for nothing, man? How long are we going to die for nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long are we? I mean, it's all for nothing anyway, if you want to be honest with you. You could pass a million bills and it won't bring George Floyd back. But at least if we can't get him back, can't the worldwide movement that his life ended up being based on, can it have its day? Mm-hmm. Can it mean something? And do we have the fortitude for it to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much politics, not enough passion. Y'all be about something. I'm sick of it. I'll never register Democrat ever again. Never. I won't caucus with the Republicans. It was the seat of white supremacy in America. But I'll never caucus with the Democrat. I will never, ever register Democrat ever again. It's all bullshit. It's a bunch of bullshit. After all of this, take a break.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Oh, it's more political news. This is political. Simone Sanders, did you see this?
Yeah.
Simone Sanders apparently is upset. She's hurt that Joe Biden passed her over for the press secretary job. If you guys don't remember, Simone Sanders is the amazingly talented black lady that was handling comms, at least in part, for Joe Biden during the campaign. And when it came time, she actually tackled a heckler at a campaign stop one time. She tackled a heckler. And when it came time to get the top job, she was passed over. And the story came out that she's hurt that she didn't get the press secretary job. Now, this doesn't mean that she will never have the press secretary job. There could be a time in the future where she does get it.
She said she doesn't want it. Well, the current press secretary, why I say it like that? The current press secretary says in about a year or so, she's not going to want this job anymore. Basically, that's what she alluded to. I think Simone was asked about that, and Simone said she doesn't want it. She doesn't want the job that she was passed over for. So if she does become press secretary, it won't be under a Joe Biden administration. Find that interesting. I've also find it interesting this story is just now coming out, because that means that she didn't get it back in November. And or maybe December. I'm not sure when that official decision was made. No, he brought Jen on in November. So November. And we're just now hearing about this. I honestly thought it was a job she didn't want because she didn't get it. Because I would think if she wanted this job, she would have gotten it because it was well deserved. It's not like she didn't have experience before. She worked with Bernie Sanders during his 2016 presidential campaign. This is a woman who has the experience to hold this position up, and she has been extremely loyal to Joe Biden, even when he's done things that made the black community upset. Mm-hmm. She has stood by him. She has fought with him. And it's interesting that he didn't choose her for this.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say interesting. It's wrong.
You think it's wrong? You think it's wrong?
I do think it's wrong. I looked up, and I keep saying Jen because I'm not quite sure how to pronounce her last name. Is it Psaki? Yeah. Psaki? I'm sorry. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. But I looked up her background and Simone's, just like on an experience level. And maybe Jen has more experience working with people who are actually in, were actually the president because of what she did with Obama. But Simone has shown her loyalty and she has experience. To me, I think it's wrong he didn't pick her if she wanted the job.
Interesting. I would hope that she would get the job. Simone is incredibly talented. I got to be honest with you. I don't care. I want, first of all, this has nothing to do with Simone Sanders.
I didn't think so.
Simone Sanders is just so overqualified for almost any job. She's so good. I think that my brain, there's only a certain bandwidth of stuff I did that my brain can like attach onto at this point, you know? And when I saw this headline, I thought, that's sad that she didn't get that. But at the same time, God damn it. There are so many big problems right now that I don't really know how much I can focus on one person and one job. Now, if you're telling me right now that there's something deeper here, that she feels like it was discriminatory, or that people, that black and brown people and women, of black women specifically, can't rise up in Joe Biden's administration, then that is a reason to rally the troops. But just the fact that she didn't get the job after she thought she was going to get the job is kind of like, I'm wondering why this is coming out.
Because I think that people are insinuating that I think people are looking at it on the outside. Oh, this black woman was passed up for this white woman, this black woman who tackled a protester, a heckler, this black woman who stood up for Joe Biden in defense of things he said against the black community, a community that she's a part of. Why? And I assume she never wanted it. So the fact that she wanted it and she didn't get it, I think it's causing people to say, well, come on, Joe. Why would you not? Jen wasn't even working for your administration. You pulled her from CNN to be a part of the team. Simone was there. She was in the trenches. So I think that's what people are looking at. Why would you not pick her? Kamala obviously saw something that you couldn't see and brought her to be a part of her team. And if Kamala runs for president, I'm sure she would have Simone doing that or something even greater in her administration.
I put it to you like this. I think the lesson here is be careful who you tackle for. That's it. I'm gonna give you a Terry Lathan special. Well, be careful who you tackle for. Keep your head up. Keep your head on the swivel. This is a... Oh, hold on for a second. Wait a minute. This is something that just jumped onto my timeline. And we're making another turn.
Okay.
Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck are hanging out again? Did you
They've
see
been
this?
Hanging out for weeks. Unfortunately, I have seen what? It because it's the kind of stuff we pay attention to.
Oh! Extra. We back? Bennifer. Is it back?
It's not necessarily back. It is not romantic. They are platonic friends, apparently. But he has been she has been seeking comfort from Ben since her breakup with A-Rod. She did the same thing with Mark Anthony. Right?
She
They're
went back to Ben?
Too. No, when with A-Rod, she went and hung out with Mark Anthony because they're close friends too. So she's been hanging out with Ben. He's been coming to see her before this Vax Live event. They both attended it, even though they didn't come in together. It's rumored that her driver picked him up and brought him to her place. And apparently they went to Montana together. I know way more about this than
they
I should.
They went to Montana together.
I know way more about this than
goes
I would like to
Montana together.
I don't know.
And
don't
doesn't
know,
fuck. If you go to Montana, what else? It's not like there's a lot of places they could have
so
gone together.
So maybe they're friends with benefits.
If you told me that they had gone to like Disneyland together, there's a lot of stuff you can do. You get on Indiana Jones, Star Tours. But if you go to Montana, there is nothing to do but ride four-wheelers and fuck.
But maybe it's not romantic. Maybe they're just friends with benefits and they're keeping it moving. Maybe they're doing it for the publicity. Maybe she's trying to make A-Rod jealous. I don't know.
Can you have, I guess you can have non-romantic sex, right? Sex can be not romantic.
Let me say this. I've never, it depends how many times. If it's a one-time thing, fine. But I've never met a woman who could continue to have sex with a man and not catch feelings. And this is like friends.
That's not true.
That's from my experience. I've never continuous amount of times. I didn't say one.
You've never met a woman that what? Okay, what's the amount of times then that a woman can have sex and not and then not catch feelings? What number
for
of sexual
one, for the one
what
person
number of
close
sexual occurrences?
Me, yeah, for the one person close to me that I was like, she could do it, and then I saw her catch feelings. I'd say around 10.
Around 10 times of a woman having sex with a man, she's going to catch
And
feelings.
I'm speaking, and before y'all go and say something about me, I am speaking from the women that I know personally. I've just never seen it. After a while, they catch feelings in some way. Maybe there's more to it than just, maybe they're hanging out, spending time together.
What's
maybe
your,
to eat. I'm
first
not
of all,
sure.
What's your definition of catching feelings?
They want more than just sex. They want to actually be... Yeah,
in a
they
relationship.
Want more than that. Yeah, or yeah, like they want more time from them, more
I
quality time.
I know women and men who have slept together for years,
and they have nothing. They have nothing. They're lying.
No, they have something.
Years?
They have
Life?
Something.
What's
it's
something?
Not, something means okay. So if you're talking about want something,
because I didn't
more,
say relationship. I didn't say they want a relationship. They want. They start to want like time and like to hang out more outside of the bedroom or wherever it's going down. They want more from them to where it's like they're playing around like it's a like it's
so
relationship, maybe without
you,
the title.
So when you say want more, you mean okay, because that's interesting. Because when you say want more, because these people that I know that have been doing this for a long time, they do like go places together and stuff.
I know they do. I'm talking strictly sex. Strictly, they eventually want more time from you. Not
how
a title,
many,
I said but, time.
But how many relationships when you are just strictly sex, though? Think about it. How many relationships do you not watch a movie? How many relationships, how many do you not go for a ride at some time? Do you not go to Chick-fil-A?
I've seen it.
But like, see, because I wouldn't consider that to be something more. I would be... Something more starts to be to me like exclusivity or getting jealous when you have somebody else. That's something more. Mm-hmm. These two people that I know have, and I think it's remarkable, and they'll know who they are when they listen to this. they've managed to never, ever even care or be jealous of one another's situations. So it's been, I've seen it done, but I guess to your point, I guess. So something more 10 times and it's something, and you said that's like,
I'm just throwing, I hate that you make me try to quantify things, but 10, fine. I'm picking a number 10.
And you said that's 10 in the most extreme situation. With most women, it's less than 10, you're saying.
I think it's from my experience.
From your experience.
From the people I know.
Of all the celebrity couples, is this really the one we would want to remix?
I didn't care about it the first go around. So no.
I'll tell you who I want back.
Who do you want back?
I gotta be honest with you. I think it's pretty easy. There's a lot of couples that I want back. For some reason, I want Chris Webber and Tyra Banks back. I don't know why.
Wow, I forgot about that.
I really liked them. Like, I really liked Chris Webber and Tyra Banks.
I like them both.
I forgot about them together. I was just like, why don't they have a baby? They have a couple of babies. 3 7-foot-tall, beautiful people. Like, I really wanted Chris Webber and Tyra Banks to work out. I really wanted it. Chris Webber used to be all, shout out to Chris C-Web. He's supposed to be coming on the podcast pretty soon too. I really wanted Chris Webber and Tyra Banks to work out. Do you have a celebrity couple that you really wanted to work out?
I'm trying to think about it now that you say it, and no.
You don't care.
I'm trying to think of some. That's so random that you pick Chris Webber and Tyra Banks.
Brad and Jennifer. Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston.
No, too much has happened. No, too much has happened. No.
Too much has happened.
Who broke up? Who famously broke up?
I know a couple that we all wanted to work out.
Who?
Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. I think when they broke up, everybody was like, she lost all her thetan count. And it was very upsetting. Nobody wanted that to work out. What the fuck am I talking about? I'm joking.
No.
Is there any couple that you didn't want to, I guess not. But really mine, that's mine. Chris Webber.
I like that. I like them both. I like that. Are they together? Are they with people? I don't know.
Yeah, they're with other people now.
Oh, okay.
It's upsetting. Okay. yeah, so really quickly, Lakeith Stanfield. We had Lakeith Stanfield on the podcast.
We did.
It was a great episode. This is a very serious topic, and I just want to we have to take some time and really talk to our brothers, specifically our brothers right now. Just stop with the weird Hitler shit. Now, I am not at all saying that Lakeith Stanfield, and he's, first of all, let's talk about what happened. There was a clubhouse room, and I guess the name of the room it had something to do with Minister Farrakhan. Okay. I don't want to be wrong here. So
the first room that they were a part of got shut down because there was so much talk that was anti-Semitic.
Right. So the
they
room
started a
off,
second one.
The room started off and I guess something about the room had to do with why they're silencing Minister Farrakhan or something to that degree. But some of the talk inside of this room, and their audio clips are out, was just viciously anti-Semitic. Just viciously anti-Semitic, right? And not in any way that needs to be deciphered. It was viciously anti-Semitic. Lakeith Stanfield was in the room, from what he says, for the original conversation, and he was made a moderator. Typically, if you go into a clubhouse room, being made a moderator of a conversation doesn't mean that you are intellectually in control of the conversation or that you are some way wielding the intellectual will of the conversation. A lot of times I go into a clubhouse room, I see people who know me, they make me a moderator almost as a sign of respect, and you can add people and stop people or whatever. Anyway, Lakeith Stanfield was in this room, and he heard this dialogue, and he was there. And it made a lot of people believe that this was in some way an endorsement of these ideas that were happening. And we're talking about the worst of the worst type of stuff. There was one part of the conversation, a clip that I heard where someone was talking about how essentially Hitler was right. And what Hitler did for his people ended up fucking insane, making for a better Germany in the future. And he was willing to make that sacrifice. We're talking about 12 million people dead. 12 million people dead in the Holocaust. 12 million people dead. And forget about 12. Okay, so let's say, not forget about them, never forget about them. But like, okay, so 12 million people dead in the Holocaust, right? So I want people to understand what we're talking about when you invoke that name or you talk about this. So 12 million dead in the Holocaust. 20 million people dead as a result of the fighting that happened in Russia, right? Hundreds of thousands of dead GIs here in the U.S., a world war, famine, all of these things because of the tyranny of one man who was able to whip up a country, then get allies, and then set the whole world at war. At war. So when we talk about the pain inflicted on to the Jews and to the others that were killed during the Holocaust, that's part of the final solution. But when we're talking about the catastrophic worldwide disease that Nazism has been, the father of it is Adolf Hitler. There's no way to invoke Adolf Hitler's name in anything short of evil.
Yeah.
Stop with this shit. God damn, why are we overthinking shit? Hitler equal bad. Hitler equal evil. If you hear the name, shoot it down. When you see Hitler and you put two holes in him, put holes in the name, put holes in the legacy. It's easy work. So he was there. He did not he didn't do enough. He didn't do anything, according to most people, to denounce what was going on in the room, and people took that as an endorsement from Lakeith Sanfield. He has responded. Yesterday, I entered an online chat room on Clubhouse about the teachings of Louis Farrakhan. When the room's participants noticed me, I was quickly made a moderator of this room. At some point during the dialogue, the discussion took a very negative turn, and when several users made abhorrent anti-Semitic statements, at that point, I should have either shut down the discussion or removed myself from it. I condemn hate speech and discriminatory views of every kind. I unconditionally apologize for what went on in that chat room and for allowing my presence to give a platform to hate speech. I am not an anti-Semite, nor do I condone any of the beliefs discussed in that chat room. So Lakeith Stansfield has apologized, and he has unequivocally condemned what was going on in that room.
I don't even have much to add to that. Listen. You were in the room and you didn't say anything, but you did do something. You were there. You were present. You stayed as a moderator. Even if you were curious to hear what was being said, it is wrong. You are guilty by affiliation. You should never. I don't even know what to say to it. I think what you said lays it all out. He's wrong. It was disappointing to even see his name attached to any of this. And you got to do better. You got to do better. You got to do more than even an apology. You got to be, because there are people that are fans of him and they're hurt. They're upset by his affiliation to this, even if he never said anything. He's connected to it.
Well, my thing is this. Number one, this is not his initial response to it. His initial response to it.
That too.
His initial response to it was, they'll always try to discredit you. He said, thinking outside the box comes with a cost. They'll always try to discredit and attack you. Futile. So this is the thing that I'm starting to glean on, that's starting to dawn on me in these different conversations. We've seen some of this in the past. This past summer, we saw a lot of it to particular situations. I don't think people... So one thing I'll do is I'll assure... And this doesn't do anything to make any excuses for anyone. But I'll assure the people that are listening to this podcast right now that are Jewish, and this is in no way going to make any of this stuff any easier to digest, but I'll assure them of one thing. These guys have no clue what the fuck they're talking about. Like, they really don't know. All right. Now, that ignorance is the type of ignorance that gets weaponized and then gives Nazism and anti-Semitism, racism, sexism, all of those things the wheels and the fuel that it needs, right? It helps it roll, it helps it fly. So the ignorance is not an excuse, but there isn't some vicious anti-Semitism that exists in the Black community as I understand it. I have not ever in my life heard this much fucking Hitler chatter. I don't know where this my life. Hitler was as soon hang a Black man as he would a Jew.
Yeah, no, I don't know where it's coming
from. So I've never heard this much. I think this is a function of, more than anything, of every single opinion on the internet being given equal oxygen, and of people thinking a bunch of smart ass dumb shit. Well, let's think outside the box. Hitler's in the box, my nigga. He's in the box.
Yeah.
There's no outside of the box with Hitler. You know where Hitler is? He's inside of the box.
Yeah. I would just encourage thought warriors to go back and listen to one when we had Rabbi Ari Lam on.
My man.
And then when you and I discussed Nick Cannon, and we kind of talked about the Black community and why we were continuing to see public figures that are Black speak like this, both of those episodes are really good to check out about it. But yeah, no, we got to stop.
It's a lot of weirdo shit happening right now. It's weird. Okay. We have time for Van's very serious questions of the day. Question of the day. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for it? Okay. So this is the deal. Okay. Let's say tomorrow we decided we're going to give the earth a break. Okay.
All right.
We're going to give the earth a break. All right. We're going to put humanity. We found another Earth-like place, right? Another Earth-like planet. We found an Earth-like planet. But this Earth-like planet can only sustain us for 50 years. So what we're going to do is we're going to give the Earth a 50-year reset.
Oh, wow.
We can warp there to this Earth-like planet,
okay, right?
And hang out there for 50 years, and chill out, do whatever. The whole nine, we're going to give the earth a little bit of a break for us to replenish. We got to leave, though, 5 humans to look after the earth while we're gone for 50 years. We got to leave 5 humans. We're leaving the earth for 50 years. We're going to come back in 50 years. We got to leave 5 humans in charge of the earth.
This is too difficult of a question. This takes time to think about. For 50
years. No, this is your on the fly. Obviously, no. if you thought about it, you could choose on the fly, just off the top of your dome, who would be the 5 people that you would leave in charge of the earth when we were gone for 50 years?
So all humans are gone.
Every human is gone. We are going to another planet. Okay, we're going to give the earth time to reset. We've been building up to this. We got houses on the other planet. We got all kinds of stuff on the other planet. We basically is rent a planet. We're going to come back. 5 people are going to be here on earth looking after the earth while we're gone. We can only leave 5.
This is too difficult. All I'll say is I'm going to name people. I'm going to name types of people, right? Because it's all about preserving the earth, right? We don't need a government.
I need you to name.
We don't need a government. I need because, you to name because there'd be no people, people here. No.
I need you to name specific people.
We need an environmentalist.
Okay, who though? Who?
Greta.
Greta. Okay, Greta Thunberg. Okay, so now we start. Greta Thunberg. Okay, cool. All right, go.
The animals are still here, right?
The animals are here.
Okay, somebody to oversee the animals. I don't know who that is.
You have to say somebody. You have to say someone. Rachel, it's all up to you. You have to say somebody.
Okay.
You have to say someone.
I don't know.
You have to say somebody.
No, I don't.
Somebody to over see the animals. Animals. Who, but who? Who? Like Jack Hanna? Bindi Irwin? Who?
I was going to say Bindi. I was like, she doesn't even live here. Oh, shoot. It's not the United States. It's the world.
It's not the United States. It's the world.
So I could name Bindi.
You could name Bindi.
Bye. Bindi. Women. Bindi Irwin. I love this. All women.
Greta and Bindi. Okay, keep going.
Me.
You'd stay? You're going to stay here? Okay, there's Rachel. No, but we need you.
I'm going up. I'm going away. I'm going away.
Right. And by the way.
50 years, I'm warping.
But no. You're going to live the whole 50 years. Because like the special technology.
But do the people in my life live the 50 years?
Everybody does.
So we're in a time capsule.
We're in a time capsule. Like this is every, we're
like
going.
We're locked in.
But we're taking something and none of us are going to age. We're giving the world a break. We're going 50 years. We're coming back.
Okay. Fauci.
Fauci, good answer.
Oh my gosh, I got two more.
You got two more.
Okay, I want these people to have some form of entertainment.
Okay.
So I'm gonna leave them with who's a legend that could just entertain them all the time. Who would I want it to be?
Right.
Let me think about it. Okay. And who's just gonna run stuff? I don't trust anybody in government. Britney
Spears?
No, Britney.
Oh,
DeBarros.
Oh, Britney DeBarros. Okay.
We like her. I'm gonna go ahead and throw her in there.
So your five are Greta Thunberg, Bindi Irwin.
Fauci. Somebody's got to entertain them, right? Like there's got to be some type of music. I cannot think of who I want that person to be.
No, you have to name this person. This is the game. You have to.
And who was my last person? Britney.
Your last person was Britney.
Okay. Who are your people? Because unfortunately, you've thought about it.
No, I haven't.
This might be the most difficult question you've ever asked.
This is. I have not thought about this. Okay. This is off the fly. I'm serious. Okay. I haven't thought about it.
Okay.
So mine would be Michelle Obama. She's going to be the person that's going to walk. That's going to watch over everything.
Okay.
All right. My environmentalist is Bill Nye, the Science Guy.
Okay.
My person to watch after, because you have to have, the animal person,
right? So, you gotta have the animal person.
So mine is the lady. What's her name? Gorillas in the Mist lady. What's her name?
Who's this?
Jane Goodall.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good.
Jane Goodall is my animal lady.
All right.
My entertainer.
So you like the five categories that I have?
I loved them.
Brilliant.
I think they're
okay,
right.
Thank you.
My entertainer, I've picked this person for a very specific reason. Kevin Hart.
Oh, funny.
And I tell you why it's Kevin Hart. It's Kevin Hart because not only is Kevin Hart like gonna be entertaining, but he's also nonstop work ethic. It's gonna be a lot of work. And by the way, these people. Like, you know, they're going to be sex bots for these people to kind of, you know, be around, and they're going to be able to talk to their family all the time, but they have to take care of the earth 50 years. Five people to take care of the earth while the rest of us are gone. Or maybe we're asleep for 50 years.
Okay.
Maybe we're asleep. We're asleep for 50 years.
Did you name four? You only named four.
I only named four. So I had an entertainer, an animal person, an environmentalist. Oh, I don't have an infectious disease person. Which you have to have. And I'm not going to steal Fauci. And for my infectious disease person, it's going to be Kizzy Corbett.
Good.
So that's it. Those are the five people. All right. Shout out Kevin Hart. Look, guys, I said what I said during this podcast. And that was a hard edition of Van's Very Serious Questions of the Week.
It was, but it's interesting. They're always interesting.
They are.
Makes me think.
All right. Thursday, guys, we have Michael Rappaport. He has said that he's coming on.
We should just surprise folks with that. Let's just surprise him.
That he's coming on.
Take it off.
Michael Rappaport. He's coming on.
Is it because
Thursday.
We shamed him? What made him change
his
mind?
I reached out. I'm like, dog, are you coming on the podcast or not? Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? And so he says he's coming on Thursday. Like, Michael Rappaport on Thursday, I'm 60% sure.
Y'all go to his social and say, I can't wait to see you at Higher Learning. Like, let's put it out there. Let's make this a thing. So he shows up. Yeah. I'm going to put it on my Instagram.
Yeah. On Instagram. All right. You guys, take your thinking caps off. Do not stop learning. I'm Van Lathan.
I'm Rachel Lindsay.
We out.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.